This is Life Talk, where we tell it like it is. Life Talk is motivational, helping you get to the next level in life. Life Talk is educational to broaden your knowledge. Life Talk is inspirational to get you fine-tuned to start doing what you love doing. Life Talk, sponsored by KamerEducation.org. And here's your host, Marietta Kammerer.
Spreading love, only miss the sun when it starts to snow. You only know you love it when you let it go. And you let it go.
Hello and welcome to Life Talk with Marietta. I'm your host, Marietta Kammerer. We all had a busy week with Easter, cooking, visiting, traveling, and oh my God, we're back in the rat race now. So I did R&R for 3 days. I did nothing, nothing, not a thing. And I feel terrific. So a big shout out tonight to our Millie. Our youngest listener at age 94, sharp as anything. And dear Millie, I have a wonderful gift card for you, a $10 gift card for Lakeside Nutrition. So, and we want to thank you for your support and always your feedback. So, and I think you have a terrific son and a terrific family. So, thank you for supporting Life Talk with your feedback as well. Well, we have a great two-hour show tonight from 7 to 9 called Conscious Living, Care and Skills for Mind, Body. We're discussing fear and anxiety as participants in this world theater and what effect it has on us, and we're not realizing it. With COVID for 2.5 years, Ukraine war, price increases, increased shooting, et cetera, and how easy it is to get stuck because of lack of processing. And so that's in the first hour. Second hour from 8 to 9, self-reliance as tool to future-proofing our children. Future-proofing our children. What parents, grandparents, caregivers, and family members need to know. We're starting our program with Julie Winter, psychotherapist, at 7:30, and I will bring in Dr. Chris Gilbert and Bob Waters, and Dr. Marcus Stademann could not be with us tonight from Germany. He called me this morning. He had a family emergency. So I also have a very quick announcement. It's about a nonprofit, and I checked it out. I have the copy of the IRS letter. The Fuller Foundation, Incorporated, in Oxford, Connecticut. Its mission is to help Ukraine with personnel and hands-on assistance. Now, folks, they're starting up from ground zero. They need everything. So, and I said to Therese Fuller, who's the president, I will send you, anybody who's interested in helping in any way, anybody who wants to get information and wants to help, call Therese directly, and here's the number, 203-703-8202. I'll repeat the number, 203-703-8202, and I know they have good intentions, but look, we all started up once upon a time. I remember 2004 I started up. It's tough. It's a tough start, so give them a call and see if you can help. So I'm done with my announcements, and Mr. Engineer, I'm ready to start our first segment.
For me, and darling, just dive right in and follow my lead. Well, I found a girl, beautiful and sweet. Oh, I never knew you were that someone waiting for me, 'cause we were just kids when we fell in love, not knowing what it was. How will I get?
Welcome to Julie Winter's World. Julie, well-known internationally as a brilliant psycho-spiritual therapist, channel, astrologer, and author of DancingHomeBook.com, available on Amazon. Julie is sharing her gifts and talents, answering your questions in times of economic stress and uncertainty. Welcome, Julie Winter.
Good evening, Julie Winter. How are you?
Good evening, Marietta. So good to talk to you. I'm fine.
Great, great. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you. So I'm going to read from my book, Dancing Home, from the chapter called Hooks and Stars. And there are two characters, central characters to the book, Serena and Leo. And they met recently, and Leo has invited Serena to dinner at a Chinese restaurant, and they are finishing their meal. They tell each other some of their stories. He has two sisters, one a teacher working with emotionally disturbed children, and one studying to be an orchestra conductor. She won't ever get work, Leo says, but she loves it. She's a passionate musician. Leo is the middle child, but he thinks his mother miscarried just before he was conceived. You think, but you don't know, asks Serena. No, I do know. I don't officially know. Ah, she says, secrets. She tells him that she is an only child, that her mother lost a baby a year before Serena's birth. She tells him that her father died when she was five. She doesn't say that Ruby almost died when Serena was born. She does not talk about Ruby's rages, about her constant fear as a child that her mother would one day leave her to free herself from the terrible burden of raising a child alone. Or about Ruby screaming, "You don't know how to love. You don't know how." The scent of the food drifts through their tails, rich and comforting, even in the midst of her difficult feelings. The plates are cleared, and the table spotty, but empty of dishes. Serena's hand is resting on the shiny table surface, and Leo covers it with his own. When he touches her, it is as though her whole history falls into her lap. Her yearning, the loves she has had, her father's death so early in her life. The feelings pile on top of each other, invisible and vastly present. She looks at him and wonders about what energies draw people together. Forces that move silently, perhaps glimpsed in dreams or at odd moments. Energies that tug us, even as we think we are making plans. So here we have two characters getting to know each other, beginning to reveal themselves. But notice there are things Serena says and things that she doesn't say. And I'm going to talk about vulnerability and loving. And when I was thinking about this evening, I thought, well, maybe I'll look up the definition of vulnerability. And then as someone who's been a therapist for so many years, I thought, well, I know what vulnerable means. But I looked it up, and it turns out I didn't completely know what it means. So here's the definition. Vulnerable. Susceptible to physical or emotional attack or harm. Susceptible to physical or emotional attack or harm. So I was thinking of my talk this evening as vulnerability light and shadow. Because in harmonious circumstances, in loving circumstances, vulnerability is a blessing and a gift. You can open your heart to someone and be intimate. Intimacy is what I talked about last week. And there are a couple of things I want to say before I get into vulnerability and loving. First of all, we're assuming, in the way that I'm talking, it's assuming that choices are available to everyone. But that's not a correct assumption. Choices are not available to everyone. The choice to be vulnerable and thoughts about being vulnerable and how much you're going to open to love and so forth are not available to you if you're a child born into a country where there's famine. They are not available to you if you're a child or an adult living in a war. Your priorities in that situation are staying alive. So I want this to be understood in the context of people who have the privilege to make choices. In metaphysics, there are four main areas of life. Now, you could say there are more than four. Yes, that's true. This is a convenient way of thinking about it. And I'm going to define metaphysics because it is not a common word. The branch of philosophy that deals with the first principle of things, including abstract concepts such as being, knowing, substance, cause, identity, time, and space. So I was trained in metaphysics. It's a spiritual teaching. It is not a religion. And the four main areas of life, the four categories, are love and relationship, body and wellness, health and wellness, money and abundance, work and creativity. So I'm going to talk about love and vulnerability and relationship. In order to love, you must allow yourself to be vulnerable. If you've had a loving childhood, warm arms, enough food, kindness, then your experience of vulnerability, since children are by definition vulnerable, your experience of vulnerability is a positive one. So you are able to open your heart, share your deep feelings, connect with someone, share your love. If you've had a difficult childhood, and this would probably be true of many, if not most, people in the world today, that vulnerability is frightening. Children, as children, if they are in difficult circumstances, work out strategies to protect themselves, defenses to protect themselves. But they're working them out as children, and children do the best they can, but their understanding is limited. Sometimes those defenses, if they're not explored in some way, are carried with us into adult life and do not serve us well. And sometimes they lock us away from being vulnerable. Can this be healed? Can you work with it so that vulnerability becomes tolerable and then perhaps desirable? Yes. You can work on it with therapy. You can work on it in a spiritual practice. You can work on it in an organization like Al-Anon. If one of your parents has had problems with alcohol or drugs, you can work on it through reading. So, yes, you can work on it and become vulnerable. And thereby make a loving attachment. There's a popular saying, even amongst therapists, or maybe it started with therapists, that you can't love someone else unless you love yourself. That's not true. That's not true. You can be in the process of learning to love yourself, esteem yourself, care well for yourself. And being in that process, as you are in that process, you can certainly create a loving relationship. There's an assumption, if you think of the phrase from the Bible, love thy neighbor as thyself. That makes an assumption that you do love yourself. But people who are raised in challenging circumstances, people who come to me to work with me, do not esteem themselves, do not love themselves, do not care for themselves well. And healing that, healing the injuries of childhood, make vulnerability possible. And vulnerability is necessary in order to make a loving relationship. And it's choice. If you've had a difficult past and you choose partners who mirror your past, mirror the past difficulties, then you may get into a relationship where you are vulnerable to someone who is emotionally harmful. So that's the shadow side of vulnerability, that you might get caught in a relationship that is harmful and need to work your way out of it. And there are ways to do that. The second piece that I want to talk about, and I'm talking about these very complex issues in such a brief way. The second one is wellness, health and wellness, which is also related to caring for yourself. If I esteem myself and I have the choice, then I can eat well, move my body. The body is made to move, unless for some reason you can't. I can treat myself with love, creating health, respecting my body, caring for myself consciously, and supporting my health and wellness. You can also use metaphysics to create an intention, a clearly understood direction toward behaving in a healthy way, imagining yourself as being healthy and strong, imagining it and then turning it over to those energies that are larger than yourself to assist you. Because I believe that we live in the greater sense with energies that are personal and energies that are beyond the personal. And when you call on the energies that are beyond the personal and imagine yourself healthy, and this has been done in experiments now over and over again. Imagine yourself healthy. Imagine yourself well. That imagining goes into your nervous system and your brain patterns and begins to manifest as good health and self-care. You can imagine yourself doing well, even in something as serious as a cancer treatment. I've worked with many, many people who had life-threatening illnesses and used metaphysics, imagination, calling on the energies beyond the personal to assist them. And to go back for a moment to vulnerability, when you are ill, it increases your vulnerability, your sense of vulnerability. So it is most important to love yourself in that vulnerability and help heal yourself.
Thank you so much, Julie Winter. And I'm very excited to announce that I have a copy from Julie Winter, Dancing Home book, here in my hands. And if you would like a copy from Julie, please call now, 203-333-9422. This is our gift. This is Julie's gift from her to you for a big thank you. And also part of our conscious living event. I'd like to thank you, Julie Winters, very much. And we'll see you, we'll hear you next week, same time.
Yes. Thank you so much, Marriott.
Thank you so much. Thank you. All right. Good night. And what we're going to do is before we're going to go for a 1 minute break. After the break, I will bring in Dr. Chris Gilbert. You know Chris Gilbert. She's an MD, PhD, and author of 5 books, and also Bob Waters. He's our entrepreneur, our business, a business owner, and a Life Talk contributor. So that is after. We only have 1 minute break for commercials. And tonight's program was sponsored in part by TheHealingMindMagazine.com, an international platform for conscious living, a monthly digital magazine. So check out thehealingmindmagazine.com. Just check it out. So we're going for a break now. So stay tuned, and we'll see you in about in a minute.
Ricochet, you take your aim. Fire away, fire away. You shoot me down, but I won't fall. I am titanium. You shoot me down.
Life Talk with Marietta continues on WICC 600.
And I'm feeling so small. It was over my head. I know nothing at all. And
you tuned in to Life Talk with Marietta. I am Marietta, and I'd like to get going with our second segment. First of all, we're going to be on for 2 hours tonight from 7 to 9. And in our second segment, we're discussing when fear and anxiety gets the best of us. But allow me to introduce my guest, Dr. Chris Gilbert, MD, PhD, and author of 5 books. Good evening, Dr. Chris. How are you?
Good evening, Marietta. Good. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you for being. And, of course, Bob Waters, entrepreneur, business owner, and Life Talk contributor. Good evening, Bob. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Marietta. Good evening to you and the audience and Dr. Chris.
Thank you. Our program was sponsored in part by KmarEducation.org, your partner for enhancing life skills. Now, I'm supposed to say all of this. So I said it. Now we can begin. When I went to Dr. Google, Dr. Chris, Dr. Google knows everything, as we all know. And yes. I looked up, what is fear? I looked up, what is fear? So Dr. Google answers in many, many ways. But you, as the professional, you are a doctor, not Dr. Google. I'm being facetious. Please, if you would kindly go in some details, what fear is all about, and if we don't have fear, what actually happens? So if you would start off with that, please.
Yeah, I think fear is a normal reaction to people. It's normal to have a little bit of fear, because otherwise we would do completely very dangerous things. So it's normal to have a little bit, but we should not have too much, as this should not inhibit us to go for our normal life. So there is an appropriate amount of fear that we need to have to go and live our life. And that's where, like everything, it's balance that is very important. We need to have a balance between fear and no fear, between anxiety and no anxiety. Like, it's normal to be anxious about something that is going to happen, maybe, but we should not have too much. It makes me think about the reaction to the coronavirus. Coronavirus, it's normal to have a reaction to a virus, but then in the case of coronavirus, there is a cytokine storm. It's a big storm where the whole body gets into action, and that can bring people to the hospital because it's too much reaction.
I see. When we experience fear, the actual fear's job is to get our body ready to fight or flee. So the fear, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. It's very useful. We need to get all our hormones in gear and maybe secrete some adrenaline and be able to be very fast on our feet and decide when the event happens whether we need to run or we need to fight, or some people actually freeze. So it is useful. Fear is useful. Absolutely.
It's a warning mechanism. It's really a warning signal. Hey, I got to do something. I got to take action. So because many people are afraid of fear too, and I think we're all subject to that, especially when we're a little younger. As children growing up, we don't understand fear, so we even fear, and even people that are a little older that have never dealt with anything in the past, they're just afraid of how they're going to feel when they think about a certain moment in time, which was unpleasant, if you will. So in that moment, aren't they stuck in that fear as well?
People can be stuck in their fear. Some people are stuck in their fear. I mean, an example, a kid, for example, that sees a fire will want to, if the kid has no fear, is going to put his hand on the fire and get burned. And if there is a fear, then the kid will actually run away from the fire, which is protective. But we shouldn't get paralyzed because we're so fearful. I had patients that were so afraid of going out of their house to drive anywhere or see other people, they would be stuck inside their home and not wanting to come out. And that's pathological, and that will bring also depression and a bunch of other symptoms. So that is not good. Again, a little bit of fear is okay. Too much, not so much.
Right. And doctor and Bob, that's exactly the direction I want to go tonight. What has happened to us the past 2.5-3 years with COVID, then new events in the world with the war, increase in shootings, and so forth. So we can't even get out of this cycle of fear. But I do want to tell the audience what the difference is between fear and anxiety, if you would. We just talked about fear. What is the difference between the fear and anxiety, Dr. Chris?
Well, the fear is when it's a very strong feeling. You've got something is going to happen. You're very, very afraid. And again, you've got so much adrenaline rush. It's a very strong feeling. Anxiety could be more subtle. You could be anxious about it, and it's not. You could be anxious about a particular event. You could be anxious about nothing. You could be a generalized state of anxiety when there've been a lot of events. And actually, we talk in this case, in what's happening, we talk about a cascade of events, a cascade of trauma. And like there was the virus before, you've got the Delta virus, then we've had the Omicron virus. So people were much weaker because they had been fearful of what had happened. So they're much weaker at the beginning of the Omicron variant. And then now we've got the invasion of Russia, and especially for the Ukrainian refugees, for example, that so many cascade of events that take them, when it's within 2 years, they don't have time to recover. So that anxiety is going to get even worse because there are people who are so vulnerable, they haven't recovered yet from the previous trauma, from the previous anxiety of the previous trauma. So and then in the case of the refugees, for example, there will be another event. They have to flee and they have to separate from their families. Again, this takes them at a lower level, even more vulnerable, because they haven't had time to recover from the previous trauma. And then now they're in a host country, but as I don't know, you've heard about this. They're people that are predators that want to abuse the women and maybe the kids, and again, that's another level. So people, when they have additional such a cascade of trauma, of fears, they become very, very, very vulnerable, very weak, that's what's happening. So anxiety, it's so wide. There's such a wide meaning of what anxiety is. It can be so many things, but in this particular case, there are so many traumas that get the anxiety worse and worse each time.
I'd like to take a look at what's happening to us, and I'd like to bring in Bob, because we had a conversation a few days ago, and I'd like to bring everybody back to when it first began in March, and it was pounded inside of us not to go out unless we absolutely have to. And of course, we had to go to the grocery store. And in my case, I'm the only one who can do that. So, and I felt guilty going to the grocery store. I could pick up the energy in a grocery store. That was right in the beginning of the COVID. And I rushed back to the house. I wouldn't stop any place. And this I repeated over and over again for 2.5 years. And I like to share with everybody how I feel now, where I could really just go out, put the mask on or not put the mask on, and just do my grocery shopping. And I tell you how my body sends me signals. As soon as I write my grocery list, and I don't go shopping maybe twice a month, you know, I buy bulk and whatnot, my body gives me signals. I don't feel good. It goes strictly right to my gut, and I have pains in my gut. So I said, well, I better stay close to home just in case. So, and there are times when I have put off going to the store and buying food, and I was almost out of food, because of my body sends me the signals. Even though we're okay going out and taking care of what we have to take care of, I am still in that same mode from when it first started. So, Bob, I'd like to bring you in now.
Good evening, Marietta and Dr. Chris and the audience again. And listening to Dr. Chris and of course, your story, it makes me think of fear as when a bell gets rung, and the anxiety is the continued reverberation of that bell. And just like a regular bell in real life, if you never give it time to stop ringing and you just keep hitting it with more and more fear, even when the fear goes away, like you said, the anxiety is still there. And it is definitely the body's mechanism to try to protect you. You know, if she wants to go out, to keep her home, you know, make her foot hurt,
yes,
or her belly hurt,
yes,
or
yes,
give her a headache or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, you know, the body definitely does that when it perceives a real fear, it's trying to protect you. And so, you know, I agree with everything, you know, both of you have said so far. And even some of this goes back to what Julie was talking about in her segment. Breaking out of that fear is using that imagination and trying to say, okay, this isn't as bad of a situation as it should be, or I think it is. But there is that balance, and there's legitimate fears, and then there's irrational fears. And we have to do our best to try to figure out, is this a legitimate fear? You know, if I'm doing 120 miles an hour, should I be fearing that I'm going to crash? Yeah, probably, you know, at a certain point. Unless you're on a racetrack and you're a professional race car driver, then you don't fear doing 120 miles an hour, and you're probably in last place if you're only doing 120 miles an hour. So everybody's situation's different, and the fear and the way we handle the anxiety is something that, you know, we each have to work on as individuals, because everybody has a different way of overcoming those fears. Some people just say, I can do this, it doesn't matter, and conquer the fear. And then other people have to rationalize themselves into or out of the anxiety and into a more safe place. Like, it's okay to go to the store, it's been 2 years, you know, I can still wear my mask. I can still take my own precautions, because I'm definitely big on people taking their own reasonable precautions. I always come home. I wash my hands, wash my face. When it first started, I changed my clothes and do the whole, you know, take the shower and everything. But as time went on, I was like, okay, I don't have to shower every time I go outside, you know, because just wash your hands and face and you'll be okay. So I think we all have to deal with the fears and the anxiety in our own way, but it definitely is both, can be helpful and it can be a hindrance. And so we as individuals have to find that balance of how do we use that fear rather than letting the fear control us. We have to control the fear.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I'd like to bring Dr.
Absolutely.
Chris back in. You are the author of Listening Cure, Healing Secrets of an Unconventional Doctor. So the body speaks to us. Now my body is speaking to me. I didn't pay attention to it. I just said, maybe I don't feel like just going, getting dressed and going out and taking care of my events, you know, things that are necessary. And when I put it off a third time, I still didn't get it. And just now, over a little time, period of time, my body is the same. As soon as I sit down and say, okay, this is what I need to, tomorrow I'll make time to do what I need to do, and my body starts acting up.
Yeah.
I feel it.
Yeah. I think it's an example of classical conditioning, you know, the conditioned response. At the beginning, it was, you know, every time we would go out, it was we were risking our life. So our body has been trained to associate going out with risking our life. So this is normal. It's a normal reaction. Now we don't have to fear this anymore, so we need the extinction of this conditioned response. And that takes time, because the body is conditioned to protect you. Your stomach really wants to protect you and say, hey, you know, there could be risk, there could be death, you've got to be careful. And the body doesn't know yet that there is much less risk. Yeah, Bob, what did you say? What did you want to say?
I think that's exactly it. And an old therapist of mine used to call that the internal tapes. You have to change your own internal tapes. And in some cases, some people might say you have to lie to yourself a little bit to get over that, you know, old fear and that old thought. So I agree 100%. It's all conditioning. It's Pavlov's law. And, you know, we're subject to it no matter what walk of life we come from, no matter what demographic or, you know, age group. The human brain is, it's a million-year-old plus machine that is, it takes patterns, it takes situations, and it learns from them to try to protect you. And it's hard sometimes to rewire the brain to do what you want it to do rather than you than it controlling you. Again, you have to do a little bit of controlling of it.
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah. We all remember when we first started and they said, don't go out and don't do this and blah, blah, blah. So you did go out because very quickly to this grocery store with a list. I forgot half of it. Went right back home because the feeling in the grocery stores in the beginning of COVID, they really mm-hmm. didn't want you. And look at the poor people that were at the cash registers. The way they looked at us, you know, because mm-hmm. they hated to be there, the poor people, you know. Thank God mm-hmm. they were there. Thank God somebody was there. So you weren't really wanted in the grocery store in the beginning of COVID. This is my own personal opinion and feeling. Mm-hmm. I can only tell you from feeling. So I came home the very first time, and wouldn't you know, I started coughing. Coughing, definitely the next day, it was Saturday, I remember, I started coughing, and I really panicked. I said, I picked something up. I went crazy for a few hours, and then I calmed down. So little by little, we adjusted, you know, to go out less or hardly went out. And before you know, 2.5 years went by, and now we can do our regular things and feel good, maybe stop somewhere and have something to eat. You know what? I'm still at the grocery store and then just go home because I'm ready to make an excuse. Oh, don't do the other events. You can do it some other time. So how do I am 100% sure that we have people like that out there. They haven't realized it yet. Maybe they say, oh, things are different now. They may not be able to pinpoint it. But if they listen to their body every time they're ready to do something, what they've always done, what was the normalcy, they get a sign from their body, headache or the body speaks. How do we process this whole thing? What do we do to feel normalcy again, to feel normal?
Yeah, in this case, Mariette, what I do is a typical case where Gestalt therapy is wonderful. Like I describe in my book, The Listening Cure, I give a voice. It's very important to give a voice to your stomach, who really wants to protect you and who has all this story of what has happened before. And so I separate, like, that's the two-chair method in a way. So in one chair, I say, you can sit in one chair and give your stomach a voice. And your stomach will say, oh, my God, I'm so tense because I want to protect Mariette. I imagine your stomach would do that, would say that. I'm putting words in your mouth. But And I've been so scared because of the past, and I really want to protect her. That's why I'm not sure it's safe. And in the other chair facing the stomach chair, I would put your brain, the brain that will reassure the stomach and will say, you know, I understand. And in which case, it's very important to be very accepting of both parts, very, very accepting of your stomach that wants to protect you and has a history, and of the brain, very protective of the brain, who now realizes that there is no risk anymore. So it needs to be that dialogue between the stomach and the brain, because the stomach really needs to be heard. It probably has not been heard before, so it needs to say, yeah, I'm important, I really want to protect her because it's been dangerous in the past, and I'm not sure it's no danger anymore. And then the brain will answer, you know, but now we know it's not dangerous anymore. You can relax and go out, and maybe we'll do. And then in the technique I'm using, I'm bringing a third, which would be a third character, would be the moderator. The moderator inside of you that will say, okay, brain, I hear you. You say it's not dangerous anymore. Okay, stomach, I hear you. You know, you're very scared. But, okay, how can we solve the problem maybe little by little, one step at a time, and make sure the stomach is okay to do a little bit more each time, and so that the brain can feel that it can do what it needs to do. Let's see what I mean. That's the way I approach this.
Mm-hmm. It would be, if I was a comedian, this would be a good sketch. But I'm not a comedian. I heard every word you said. I agree with you. And that's the first thing that came into my mind. If I was a comedian, I could bring the point across, but also do it in a funny way. And I believe everything... people have different sensors when they're afraid. My sensor is the gut. So, and even if I go when we didn't have these challenging times, whenever I go somewhere, whether I go into a shopping mall or store or office, I sense, and the gut sends me an immediate reaction, where it's almost like a punch to the gut, and I will say, uh-oh, there's something going on. I feel something. I don't know what it is, but it's uh-oh, and that means a lot. Yeah, that means, hey, something is about to come down, you know?
Yeah.
So everything goes through the gut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the gut is very important, and in some cases it will protect you. In some cases, it will save your life. So absolutely, yes, I would respect your gut.
Yeah, I was going to mention that as well. My gut has saved my life a few times, and I wish science knew more about, in a sense, gut intuition. But I have a feeling, and you can obviously tell me more, Dr. Chris. I know we have a lot of nerve endings in the stomach, and it's obviously not a brain, but there's something going on in the gut. Is there something scientifically that we can put our fingers on that says this is happening?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. There are nerve cells in the gut, and the nervous system of the gut, which is called the enteric nervous system, is actually the size of a brain's the brain of a cat. So it's pretty significant, and it's wonderful. Yes. When we do need to take this into account, it's a wonderful nervous system. Absolutely.
Right, because I think we just take for granted our seeing, our hearing, you know, touch, and our basic five senses. But anything outside of those five senses, because we can't put our finger on it so easily and it hasn't been explained to us as a child, I think we just see that as the mystery. But I think a lot of those metaphysical things definitely take place in that region. You know, there's, I think, a lot of evidence for that. I just wish I knew more about it, but there's definitely something there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and especially the people who are dating, they have to be careful to this, because if their stomach, if their gut tells them to run away, they probably should run away.
They should, exactly. Absolutely.
Oh, you know,
very
what?
Very good advice.
Dr. Chris, I decided if I start dating again, I'll take you along. You will ask all the questions, and we've had wonderful programs on what we should be asking and this, that, and the other. And not to get off topic, I have one book from Dr. Chris Gilbert, which is The Listening Cure, I'd like to give away tonight. So, it's a wonderful book, and the body does speak to you. And I know that for a fact, because I'm going through it. I'm listening to my body all the time. After my stroke, no matter where the pain is, whether in the little toe or up in the neck or on the side, what doesn't matter, or in the little pinky, it doesn't matter. The body talks. So the listening cure, wonderful book from Dr. Chris, free giveaway, but you have to call our engineer, Rich, 203-333-9422. He is in the studio now, 203-333-9422. My cell phone number won't help you much. But anyway, so this is really, really exciting, and I'll tell you why. A lot of people out there, they either don't talk about it, they don't think about it, they know something is off with their body, just to do their normal things. And I have enough energy to handle everything what I handled before, and I have the time to handle everything. But no, the body controls it. The body controls it. And so with the gut, I need to go, stay close by, because once I'm in the car and once I'm out on the highway, No. So it's amazing how much the body controls you. Or is it the brain or both, Dr. Chris?
It's both. That's why it's so fascinating to give each body part a voice and explore what's happening in your body. Everybody has a different reaction from different parts of their body, and it's just fascinating to get into those individual reactions and give for different persons, stomach, gut, a voice, and discover what's in there, what needs to be said. Sometimes people have a knot in their throat, and what is that? What needs to be said? What are the words that want to get out? It's really a great process to explore that.
I love it. I need to know more about that, how it affects different people. And we have one more minute left before we go to the news, and I want everybody to know, stay tuned, because we got another hour coming, and this time it's all about it's about self-reliance. Very, very important to have that skill, and we should really teach our children and have them own it, For now, I think we're just going to go for a little music break. We're going to go to the news, and we'll be back at 8:03 sharp with my two guests, Dr. Chris Gilbert and Bob Waters. So stay tuned. Don't go away.
Scars are crying.
Are you guys here?